Who is a man's greatest enemy? Oh, brothers and sisters, don't look at me like this is such a hard question. For when you look at me in such a way, I see hesitation and cowardice. I know you know the answer. A man's greatest enemy is his partner in the womb. One who dwells there either before or after or during and laid claim to the amniotic housing that can belong to but one man. Fear your brother, my friends who sit before me. And if you're sitting next to your brother now, well, may you kill one another in the parking lot with delight and swiftness. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
Oh, story, guide me and course through my veins. Oh, yes, bleed me. Oh, that's right. Take all my blood and remove each and every strand of familial DNA. Make me a stranger unto those who know me best. Make me anonymous in your word, for I yearn to become pure in only you, O story. Brother Reed, it delights me that we are brother and sister in the story and not by blood, for otherwise I could not invoke your presence. Please, approach the pulpit and delight us in a psalm.
Someone in the neighborhood got the bright idea to go on a camping trip, four of us families from the cul-de-sac. We left as a caravan one Friday morning, one station wagon after another. The O'Connors in front, the Desjardins behind, the Akimbe family in third, a veritable UN of shitty families. And me, I took the rear, puttered along through the smoky mountains. Clarissa shouted in the back, her brother tormenting her. My wife, Deborah, passed out on pills, diet, Crocroa, and rum. I didn't mind the shouting. I didn't mind the carrying on. What did I mind? That fucking cul-de-sac. It should be mine. All four houses. The O'Connors, the Desjardins, the Akimbes. So, on a mountain ridge, 9:30 p.m. The road, dark, empty, nose to ass, our cars going along. I slammed on the accelerator with a violent stomp. My car hit the Akimbes hit the Desjardins hit the O'Connors. I watched them all fall down, down, down the ridge. Three concussive explosions, and I knew the families were charcoal. I enjoyed myself that vacation, and when I came home, the cul-de-sac was all mine.
Oh, story! Oh, my dear congregants, what a tale of truth! What a lesson in the importance of family. How delightfully this story describes your duty as a family to shun all those around you. For only when you shun your neighbor might you turn on those who dwell under your same roof.
And now a reading from the Book of Bruised Brandons, titled Brothers, by Patrick Neal Harris. Tyler took a final inventory of his supplies. Bolt cutters, trail mix, a prepaid flip phone, and a picture of his brother, Matt. He zipped up his bag, crawled over to his bedroom door, and pressed his ear against it. The drone of cable news hummed from downstairs. Tyler heard no tinkling of beer bottles and smelled no burning cigarettes. he cracked open his door and snuck into the dark hallway. Slowly, he descended the stairs. He stopped in the living room, where his father was passed out on the sofa. Empty beer bottles covered the coffee table in front of him. His hand hung over the chair, clutching a cigarette that had long gone out. Tyler got on all fours and crawled into the kitchen. He silently dragged himself across the cold linoleum towards the patio door and clasped the doorknob. "Matt?" a weak voice asked. Tyler's blood went cold. He was caught, and he slowly turned around. The shadowy outline of his mother sat with her elbows on the kitchen table, holding a mug in the air with both hands a few inches from her mouth. Empty prescription bottles were tipped over in front of her. "No, Mom. It's Tyler," his voice quivered. "Oh, Tyler," she said to herself. "Is it time for school already?" she said flatly. The microwave's green digital clock glowed with the time. It was 2:06 a.m., and Tyler was already midway through summer vacation. "Yeah, Mom," he sighed. "I gotta go catch the bus." "Did you wake up Matt? He'll be late for work, Tyler." A knot caught Tyler in his throat. "No, Mom," he croaked. "I'll wake him up soon," his mother replied vacantly. Tyler stood in silence as his mother quietly cleared her throat. He let some time pass until she zoned back out. Then he went out to the humid summer night. Tyler got on his bike and turned into the street, his backpack heavy with supplies. At the end of the street was a makeshift memorial set up by the family his brother Matt killed while driving drunk. An arrangement of flowers decayed in front of a white cross that leaned against a stop sign. There was no memorial for Matt, whose body was quickly pulled out of the crash, thrown in the back of a pickup truck, and driven away without ceremony. Tyler's heart thumped as he followed the deserted road out of town. A red glow appeared in the distance as Tyler crested a hill towards Matt's most final destination. Helicopters droned in the distance, circling the perimeter of a sprawling, brutalist housing complex illuminated in blood-red light. A street sign said, "Hell Intake Center, 1 mile." Underneath, someone spray-painted, "Abandon Hope." Rumors circulated town about what went on behind the fences. Some said it was a government project and insisted it wasn't actually the eternal jail of the damned. However, most believed it was the real deal. The handful of people who had worked security there kept a strict code of silence. They drank heavily and quietly in the dive bars outside the complex. Those who had broken the silence disappeared within hours of opening their mouths. But one story was consistent among the former guards who snapped before they themselves disappeared. Indeed, it was Hell's Intake Center, where the dead were taken to a clinic and brought back to a half state of living. They were booked, had their history cross-checked, were tortured, then waited until their number was called to be sent to eternal perdition. And Tyler was going to break his brother out. Tyler left his bike in a drainage ditch and approached the complex. Each building towered 30 stories in the air, and every square inch was illuminated in red light. The buildings arranged themselves in endless rows, disappearing into the dark horizon. Helicopters slowly hovered around the area, focusing their searchlights on the paths that twisted around the housing complex. When Tyler was about 20 feet away from the fence, he dropped on his stomach and military crawled the rest of the way. The heavy bolt cutters in his backpack chafed the skin off his back, yet he continued undeterred, motivated by adrenaline. A large fence lined the outer perimeter, followed by a narrow gravel no man's land that led to a thick razor wire fence. Tyler knelt in the grass, dew soaked through his shoes and jeans. He took a deep breath and brought his ear inches away from the fence, listening closely for a vibration or hum of electricity. But it was still. Tyler raised his hand, counted down from 10, clenched his teeth, and touched the fence. Nothing happened. He pulled out the bolt cutters and got to work, following the instructions he'd studied in YouTube tutorials. With every snip, the fence rattled. He'd freeze and hold his breath until it was quiet, then moved on to the next link. After 10 careful minutes, he'd cut a hole just large enough for him to sneak through. Tyler pushed his backpack through the opening, got on his stomach, and crawled through. He pulled his feet through until he was safely in no man's land, squatting in the narrow gravel pathway until his hands stopped shaking. His watch informed him it was nearly 3:30 a.m. Daylight was only a few hours away. Tyler brought his ear to the next fence and listened for electricity. A little heat radiated off the wires, but he could hear no hum. He clenched his teeth, raised his hand, and grasped the fence. His vision exploded in blinding white light, and his bones nearly shattered from the violent vibration. The wire seared into his hands, burning his flesh, until another surge blasted him away, hurtling him against the outer fence. Tyler laid on his back, stunned, as a pack of helicopters hovered over him, fixing their searchlights on his unconscious body. Tyler gradually regained consciousness. Hanging above him was a scorching red light, like the ones in fast food restaurants that keep fried food hot. His skin slowly blistered under its heat. He struggled to get up, but was strapped down to a gurney by tight leather straps. People in white coats shuffled around him, checking his vitals on broken-down, beeping, Soviet-era medical equipment. One tube pumped in a thick gray liquid, while another hose pumped out his blood into a dirty plastic bucket hanging off his gurney. A thick burning sensation flowed through his body and he felt stupidly slowed down. "Good morning, Tyler," croaked a snide, raspy voice. A man in a ragged military uniform approached him, illuminated in red by the hot lamp. One of his eye sockets was crudely sewn shut. Pus leaked from between the sutures out of what remained of his tear duct and disappeared into a hole where his nose should have been. "You've had quite a morning," the man said in a mocking tone as he put a stethoscope to Tyler's scalding chest. The man nodded, satisfied, and dropped the instrument. Tyler attempted to speak, but his voice was obstructed. "Oh, we have your personal effects," the grotesque doctor explained, folding his arms across his chest. "I'm sorry to say we had to throw away your trail mix. No food allowed, you know." The orderlies laughed without looking up from their work. A wet, struggling suction noise came from Tyler's arm. The IV emptying his blood had gone dry. "Excellent," said the doctor. He nodded at the orderlies. One pressed his knee on Tyler's chest as the other violently ripped the IVs from Tyler's arms. Tyler tried to scream but could only choke. Thick gray goo leaked from his wounds. The man on Tyler's chest unstrapped Tyler from the gurney. "Follow me," the doctor commanded. Tyler involuntarily sat up. His legs moved on their own, following the doctor into the hallway as if he were possessed. The walls were lined with people of all ages strapped to beds, attached to gruesome machines. One woman's arms were suspended above her chest, held up by a steel pulley that was slowly separating her shoulders from their sockets. What appeared to be a miniature guillotine hung over a boy, dropping and raising its blade, making tiny cuts into his chest in metronomic rhythm. But aside from the buzzing of the machines, the hallway was silent. Tyler tried to struggle away from the doctor, but his limbs continued forward. "Here we are," the doctor stopped at a broken door. "Get well soon, Tyler," he smiled, and pushed Tyler into a tiny office, shutting the door behind him. At a desk sat a grossly overweight man with a steel cage around his head. In the cage were thick spikes that poked his flesh whenever he moved. His face perpetually bled white goo, and aside from intermittent wincing, he seemed to be accustomed to the steel spikes. The man opened a manila folder and took a moment to read its contents.
"At approximately 3:13 this morning, you broke into the intake center. Is this correct?"
he burped. Tyler was frozen in his chair.
"I'll take a wild guess and assume you were trying to contact this man, inmate number 26A449DD.
He stated routinely as he slid Matt's picture across the desk to Tyler. He reached into his desk and pulled out Tyler's cell phone.
"I'm not sure what you were planning to do with this," the man said flatly. But I suppose you're entitled to a phone call, right?
He opened up the phone, dialed a number, and put it on speakerphone. It rang several times before the other end picked up. Hello? Rasped Tyler's mom. The man leaned over the phone, needles poking his forehead. Hi, Mom. Tyler's voice came out of the fat man, who was beginning to enjoy himself. He winked at Tyler. Is that you, Matt? His mom asked vacantly. No, Mom, it's Tyler. But I'm here with Matt, the man said in Tyler's voice. Tyler tried to struggle but choked. Oh, good, his mom said emotionlessly, slurring her words. See you at dinner. She hung up. The man stared at Tyler a little stunned, and they shared a moment of silence until he made an exaggerated whistle. He cleared his throat and got back to business.
Would you like to contest the charges? No? Okay,
he said without giving Tyler a chance to respond.
Okay, breaking into hell carries an eternal sentence, he said lifelessly. We'll show you to your room as you wait for the next steps, he explained, goo pouring from his wounded cheeks. You can come in, inmate 26A449DD, he called into the hallway.
The door creaked open, and what was left of Matt entered. He was shirtless. On his forehead was a deep dent that exposed bits of pink brains foaming out of bruised tissue. His jaw swung from his face, barely clinging onto his head. His right arm was ripped off at the bicep, dripping gray goo, and in his left arm he cradled a membranous pile of intestines. Tyler wanted to vomit.
Take him away, thank you,
ordered the fat man. He put Tyler's file away and pulled out a new one. Matt limped, leading Tyler into the corridor. Tyler couldn't speak, nor could he cry. His heart twisted in his chest. He wanted to hug his big brother. He wanted to tell him he loved him and that he was sorry. He wanted to be reassured that everything would be okay. Tyler had lost control of his possessed body. His neck turned, forcing him to look at the gory scene in the hallway. A man twitched on a bed, his brain spilling out the back of his head from a shotgun blast. A frail geriatric woman curled in a ball, covered in suppurating smallpox. Tyler could not look away. His mind felt like it was splitting into pieces. Matt stopped at a door, and it swung open automatically. He entered, and Tyler's body closely followed behind him. The room was just 4 feet wide and 3 feet deep, with the ceiling just 3 feet tall. In the center were two chairs, each facing a tiny screen cut into the wall. Their bodies jerked as an unseen force uncomfortably folded them into the small chairs. The door behind them shut, and a dull succession of locking mechanisms sealed it in place. The room went dark, and the tiny screens flickered on. Television snow gave way as images took shape on the screen. A home movie of Christmas morning began to play. Tyler watched as his 8-year-old self and a 10-year-old Matt opened gifts simultaneously, revealing BB guns.
Thank you, Santa!
They screamed in unison, jumping around the living room. Their father watched on, smiling, drinking coffee. Come here, boys, their mom said warmly. They ran to her and gave her a hug. I love you, she told them. The screen went black. Television snow gave way as the Christmas scene repeated itself. Over and over and over again. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
Oh, story. Oh, brothers and sisters. What a delight. What a treat to hear how we must shun our families. You know, I myself couldn't help but giggle throughout that whole story. It reminds me of myself as a young woman. He never knew. He never knew what I had done. Putting that bloody knife under my brother's pillow. Framing him for murder of the neighbor's dog. Oh, story. Oh, brothers and sisters. To see him strapped in that chair just weeks later, lit up like a Christmas tree. That beautiful electric current flowing through that chair. Oh, brothers and sisters, how I wish you could have seen it. Oh, how I wish I could see it again and bask in its delight.
Thank you for listening to The Story Must Be Told, says me, a little kitty cat, meow meow. We are proud to be hosted on the Last Podcast Network, lastpodcastnetwork.com, and I lick myself all day, me moo. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TSMBTpod. I make my shits in sand, but shh, don't tell no one. We got shirts for sale. Affordable Handsome from Topedo Co. Links on our Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud. Hey, where are you going with that shovel, Eugene? You better not be looking for my little shits. Rate and review us on iTunes. Write us something. Eugene, stop it, Eugene. Oh, God, Eugene. This was a Post Everything production. Check out our short films on PostEverythingProductions.com. Ooh, this little kitty boy done murdered a young man. Again. We'll be back next week where I'll be the first kitty cat to get the chair. Oh, it's right now? Oh, God!
Okay. Story is about brothers.
Yeah.
It's very heavy and very dark.
Yeah.
I think it'd be funny if you thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Cool.
The story must be told.